Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life is songs of grief with the yellow fear and fearless eyes. You temper all the times, the times I've
welcome tried. To Court Appointed. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer dude and a judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
I should have added I was the week one high point earner for my fantasy football league.
Well, oh, that's quite a title to add in there by judge.
Yeah. So, I mean, to start back over and re-record that because I absolutely blew it up this week in fantasy football.
Well, that and $10 will get you a cup of coffee.
It actually got me $25.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I won my game. I won my fantasy football game. I didn't set the high score. It was pretty good, though, because I would have beat every other team that lost, but I would have lost to every other team that won.
Wait a second. Say that again.
I would have beat, both my score would have beat every team that lost, but it would have lost to every team that won.
Oh, so you were the least prosperous victor.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I would have beat anybody else if I was playing any of the losers, but I would have lost any of the winners.
Yeah. See, me, I would have beat anyone.
Well, that's good. Beat them all.
Beat them.
Mike
beat
Meadows for lawyer. He'll beat them all.
Beat them all and let Roger Goodell sort them out.
He wins at fantasy football. That's good. That's good advertisement for him to be your lawyer.
Well, this is a new league, too. This is some neighbors that we just formed a league this year. So everybody's really, we actually got a trophy and everything. Yeah. So it's going to be a good season. I can feel it.
Well, we've had a traveling trophy in ours. We've had ours since, I think, 2004 or something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Clint runs it.
Oh, yeah.
And the boys were all in it up until this year. And Clint announced after the draft, he said, Griffin has opted out this year. So he introduced the person who was going to take Griffin's place. And I mean, just as soon as the text hit, I look and another text hits and it's Justin. And he says, I didn't know that was an option. Can you find somebody for me?
That's funny.
He just felt like he was trapped in the league. He had to keep playing.
Did I play in that league one time, like in 2008 or 2009, I think?
You might have.
I think I did, but I don't think I got invited back.
Well, you might have been filling in for somebody that left or something. I don't know.
At one point, I was playing in like three different leagues, and then last year, I didn't play in any. I was in one that we've been doing since like 1999, like since long, long time ago. But that one kind of fell apart eventually.
Well, I played in two, not last year, but I think the year before. I joined the one by accident. I didn't mean to. But I felt bad. I'd already got a team, and they'd formed the league, and I hated to just drop out and leave them a dead team in there. So So I played it all year, then ended up finishing second in the league.
What does that say about your managerial skills?
I guess, I don't know. I guess they're all right.
I guess we could change our podcast format to talk about fantasy football.
There's probably a ton of fantasy football podcasts. I know there's a couple of them that try to tell you who your sleepers are to pick up each week and stuff, but I don't listen to those.
So listen here. This is Mike with your lead pipe locks, 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 locks. Here's who you got to bench and sit in week two.
Huh. Okay.
you're like,
I can't get that excited about it. It's just, I just want to watch and enjoy the games, and fantasy football makes it too nerve-wracking for me because I'm like, I don't care if you're winning by 30 points. I need another touchdown. Throw it to so-and-so. I need him to score.
I did come up with a very good name for my fantasy football team this year, though. Yeah. Now, traditionally, I had always stuck with the Dread Pirate Roberts. That had been my fantasy football team forever. I actually even edited the Wikipedia page for Dread Pirate Roberts one time to say that it was a successful fantasy football franchise. And it actually stayed up for a couple years until they finally caught on about it. But then, so my name this year, I drafted Patrick Mahomes. I got him as a steal in the third round. So the name of my football team is Country Roads Take Mahomes.
Well, that's pretty good.
So I think
I've had my same name all along. It's Rilo's Rowdies because Riley helps me with it. So, you know, so it's fun for the two of us.
Well, we're going to shift gears here from fantasy football and actually talk about legal stuff.
And actually shifting gears.
And actually shifting gears. That's right. And actually shifting gears. We talked about this a little bit last week. We were kind of hit on the idea of Tesla and why they were able to sell directly, whereas people like Ford and Chevrolet, they actually have to have dealers.
Well, everybody else in the known world has to have dealers except for Tesla.
Well, in the United States.
Yeah, in the United States. The United States is the only place that sets up dealer franchises and individual dealers and stuff to distribute automobiles.
Yeah, which we seem to say that quite a lot when we're talking about differences in the world and the United States. It's like, we're the only place in the world where this happens. I wonder why that is. That's kind of a recurring theme.
Yeah, I know. I'm not sure if that's good or bad.
It's definitely one of them.
Because, I mean, most of the other ones have all been around longer, and they probably looked at us and said, look at those, what those upstarts are doing.
Yeah.
That ain't going to work. Let's just keep doing it the way we're doing it. You go to the lake and throw a rock in, and that determines what car you get.
What?
That's some European country or something. That's how they do it. I don't know.
I thought like a hand comes from a lake and it holds up a key, and then you have to pull the key from the hand that comes from the lake, and then
Excalibur,
which I think that's actually a model of Chevrolet car. I could be wrong though. So when you're looking at different models for selling and different in business, there's single level marketing in which there's a direct seller who makes money from buying products from a parent organization and then selling them directly to the customer. Then there's the other model, which you see a lot of on Facebook, which is called multi-level marketing. And that's sometimes called network marketing or person-to-person marketing, where the direct seller makes money from their direct sales and also earning commissions from what they the people they've recruited to sell as well, which is kind of similar to a pyramid scheme, if you kind of think about it. But it's multi-level marketing is actually legal in most states. But
that's what I was just going to say. And then next level is pyramid scheme.
It's somewhere between pyramid scheme and direct selling. So the classic example of direct selling that we have here in the United States, which we touched on last week, was car dealers, because direct automobile sales are prohibited in many states and they can't do that. So what happens is that a dealer or a franchisee purchases the cars from the automaker, and then they in turn turn them around and sell them to you, the consumer.
That's right. If you want a car, you don't call up Ford and say, hey, I want one of your cars. You go to the local Ford dealership.
That's right. Now, the laws against direct auto sales historically rose in the United States starting in the 1930s, about the same time that automobiles became more prevalent in the United States. And these laws have been defended throughout the 21st century, and they actually continue to this day. And these regulations protect dealerships against manufacturers opening their own dealerships and competing against the resellers. And so in some ways, it kind of goes against the concept of capitalism.
That's true. That's true.
The Federal Trade Commission recommends allowing direct manufacturer sales, coincidentally. And a 2000 report by Goldman Sachs projected that it would save an average of $2,225 on a $26,000 car to buy it directly from the factory. So think about that.
Yeah. Well, that's why people have wondered why they can't do that.
Yeah.
Because you buy everything online these days.
That's right. if it comes from Amazon, I can buy it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right that the laws became prevalent in the 30s and 40s. But actually, the very first franchise was a dealership in the United States established in 1898 by William Metzger. Direct sales by the automaker to consumers are now limited by most states to U.S. franchises.
Was the name of that company Metzger's Motors by chance?
Could have been.
That would be a good name.
Yeah, might as well be. Metzger's Go Getters.
If I were going to have one, I'd call it Meadows Motors.
Well, you should. Car dealerships are usually franchised to sell and service vehicles by specific companies. They are often located on properties offering enough room to have buildings housing a showroom, mechanical service, and body repair facilities. Now, the dispute about franchises is that multiple studies have shown that franchises increase car costs by nearly 10%.
Absolutely.
Additionally, the issuance of new dealership licenses is subject to geographical restriction. If there is already a dealership for a company in an area, no one else can open one. And this has led to dealerships becoming, in essence, hereditary, with families running dealerships in an area since the original issuance of their license, with no fear of competition or any need to prove qualification or consumer benefit beyond proving they meet the minimum legal standards as franchises.
So, I got to tell you, that sounds un-American to me.
Un-American, because we're built on capitalism.
That's right.
Now, the laws against direct sales arose historically in the United States during the 30s, as you said. Automobile manufacturers started using independently franchised dealerships to offload the task of retail selling and servicing vehicles. The laws have been actively defended into the 21st century and extend to online in-state sales.
We know it kind of makes sense, like if you're talking about the when they first came to fruition, because that way the automaker could focus on making the cars and not have to worry about distributing it. So, you know, this is when they're kind of really coming up with the technology of how to make cars. So they were able to focus on that.
That's exactly right. They wanted to focus on design and innovation and all that kind of stuff. And they didn't really want to focus on all the sales that are involved in it. And also, that's going to vary from place to place. You wouldn't sell a car the same way in, you know, New York as you might sell it in West Virginia. So,
yeah,
like, you know, there'd be a lot of differences.
Like in New York, you'd be like, hey, I'm buying a car here.
So such regulations protect dealerships against a manufacturer opening its own dealership and competing against resellers, which would be seen as abuse of the manufacturing franchise relationships. Critics view the laws as thwarting legitimate competitive pressure that benefits consumers, and some have described it as protectionism. Now, way back in the day, if you wanted a newfangled horseless carriage, you would head... That's what they called them when they first came out, horseless carriages. You would head over to Ransom E. Olds factory in Detroit to order yourself a curved dash. You'd speak with a salesman right there who would offer a few options and then put your car into the build cycle. So you would actually go and order your car, and then wherever your order fell, that car would be assembled to your specifications. A few weeks later, you'd get a call or a telegram that your brand new hand-built car was available for pickup. Factory direct sales worked well because cars were initially very expensive and were often viewed as expensive toys for the wealthy. Mm-hmm. So in other words, there wasn't that many of them running around or to be sold. A few years later, an alternative existed for rural homeowners looking for their first new car. Anything their local general store didn't offer could be bought through the Sears catalog. In 1909, that included cars. The Sears motor buggy featured a 10-horsepower two-cylinder engine and top speed of 25 miles per hour for just a few $100s.
Wow.
You could get a new four-seat runabout. With the crate delivered to your local train depot, you'd have to open it, do some final assembly work, add oil and gas, and drive home in your brand new car.
These methods, crazy.
Yeah, just delivered it off, just offload it from a train down at the depot, and you go pick it up. These methods worked well in a country where cars were small volume sellers, but quickly fell out of favor once the Ford Model T busted the price barrier and got the country rolling. In an effort to increase sales and profits, the auto manufacturers created the dealership sales model. Ford, based in Dearborn, Michigan, knows how to build cars, but doesn't know how to sell that car as well as your local dealer. Advertising that works in New Mexico doesn't necessarily work in New Hampshire. The options are to pay for a massive advertising network specific to each market, as well as thousands of storage locations across the country, or farm it out. So they decided farming it out was the best way. So independent dealerships proved to be that solution. Sales increased sharply in the 20s and 30s and then really took off after World War II. It was a win-win for manufacturers and dealerships. In this environment, Sears tried selling cars again in the 1950s. Rather than a new creation, its 1952 Allstate was a badge-engineered version of the Kaiser Henry J, which was a Ford that was already being built. So they basically just got them and added some modifications to it. It was attractive and loaded with features, but few stores ever had a display model for interested buyers. Kaiser dealerships also didn't want to service the Allstate because the owner hadn't bought it there, and so the dealership, it led to legal wrangling with Sears. That, plus the sales of less than 2,500 over 3 years, led to the discontinuation.
So you can no longer buy a car from Sears.
No, you know, Sears used to sell houses, too.
Oh, yeah. I've seen, there's actually, there's still some of them around. And you, like,
yeah.
That usually when you see them, they say, this is a Sears house. Like, it's kind of, they advertise. It's kind of a thing.
Right.
Now.
There's one right by the tracks where the train tracks go through Hurricane, West Virginia.
Oh,
there's
really?
One right off the tracks right there. Yeah. Sears was still there today.
Hmm. You know, the, interesting thing is too, is like you see pictures occasionally of, old military Jeeps that are in boxes or crates. Mm-hmm. And supposedly, you know, you can still find those and buy those for like really cheap and put them together, but that actually doesn't happen anymore. But I think back in the day, you used to be able to find military Jeeps just in boxes, and you essentially pop them out, jack them up, throw the tires on, and do a few things, add oil and gas, and they're good to go.
So in essence, then, by making the dealerships, now the manufacturers are seeing with online sales and everything the way they are, they kind of think, well, you know, we could capitalize on more of this ourselves now. We don't really need dealers. But it's too late because all these states, now there's no federal laws that apply to dealerships. It's all individual state laws. And that's mostly tied to different states have different laws concerning cars as far as insurance, as far as inspections, as far as equipment that you're allowed or not allowed, different things like that.
Yeah. And there's a way that they're kind of, when they restructure these laws, that they're kind of protecting the old dealers that are still around because they have a lot of pull usually in different areas and states like that.
Well, they also have a big lobby.
Well, that's so, when I say pull, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's what they
that's
got.
That's like when I say pull and I'm kind of taking my finger right off my nose like you pull.
Yeah, and that's what happened. So there are some laws that have been presented to level the playing field and they've been out lobbied. So, but it's not that they wouldn't be good laws, but there's just more money in people voting against it than for it.
Yeah. Now, I think we want to talk about some of those laws, but I believe there is a pending motion before the court today that
is
direct from the dealer.
That's right. If it pleases your auto dealership, we would like to approach the bench, pay for court costs.
All right. We'll crank it up. Let's hear it go.
We have, for the third week in a row, our very good friends at BetterHelp.com. That's H-E-L-P, BetterHelp.com.
So let me ask you, is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals?
Well, yes, something that's preventing all of us and causing depression and causing people to need a good mental health answer.
BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online.
There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas.
The service is available for clients worldwide. You don't even have to live here.
No, you'd have to live somewhere, though.
You just have to have a computer.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe not. Maybe you need a computer. I don't know. Maybe you can call a phone line. I don't know. But you do have to have a computer to log on and find out about it. But the
That's right.
You can log into your account anytime and you can send a message to your counselor.
You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy.
See, you can use your phone. You don't need a computer.
Well, a phone is a computer.
This day and age it is. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed.
It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. You can visit their website and read the testimonials that are posted daily at betterhelp.com/reviews.
Visit betterhelp.com/court. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states.
So this special offer for court-appointed listeners is 10% off for your first month at BetterHelp.com/court.
And if you're in D.C., I assume they're recruiting counselors there as well, even though it's not one of the 50 states. So just a little caveat there.
Anywhere in the United States, they're recruiting you.
And including American Samoa, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Get better help now.
I don't have word on that.
It's coming in. Beep, 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 beep. So, in the future, it's probably not a coincidence that the Sears Big Book catalog went out of print in 1993, just 1 year before the founding of Amazon. Online access changed not just clothing, electronics, and sporting goods sales, but also auto purchases.
93 was the last year for Sears?
That was it. That was the last year.
You know,
for the catalog.
Yeah, I always remember getting the Christmas catalog and thinking about how awesome it was.
Oh, yeah. I'd go through and mark every toy in the book so my parents wouldn't miss any or think I didn't want it.
Yeah.
A recent study showed that 3/4 of vehicle buyers would rather skip the dealer and purchase entirely online, and that the most irritating part of the current buying process is how long buyers spend at the dealership. An Auto Trader survey was even harsher, showing only 17 out of 4,002 people surveyed like the current sales model. Companies see that online buyers are looking for a good deal with no haggling and less time spent in the process, and they're wondering how to buy a car without going to the dealership. You increasingly have options. Mega grocery retailer Costco currently sells 500,000 cars annually through its Costco Auto program. I didn't know that.
I've heard of that, but I didn't know.
This effort works through local dealerships, but shoppers never have to set foot in a showroom. Costco finds the car the buyer wants and negotiates a good deal on behalf of the buyer. The dealer still technically sells a vehicle and will likely get the vehicle's routine service when the time comes.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So when I started researching this topic, one of the first things that popped up was a website called Quora. It's a Q-U-O-R-A. Whenever I search things, that website seems to pop up a lot of times these days. I don't know when that came to fruition or whatever, but it seems to be in a lot of Google searches these days. But anyway, it had an account from somebody who purchased a Tesla. It was kind of interesting. It said, the law that disallows direct sales is different in every state. So while it's illegal to sell someone a car directly in Texas, it's not illegal in Arizona. So when I bought my car, it was shipped to Phoenix, where all the paperwork and title were done, and the car was paid for. Then they kindly shipped my car, which I already owned, titled and insured, to my home in Texas. And that was the way they had a loophole around it. And said, if you go to a Tesla gallery in Texas, they'll happily show you the car, demonstrate the features, offer the chance to drive it, but if you ask the price or wish to consider it, they'll politely but firmly refuse. Instead,
that's right,
they'll point you to the Tesla.com website. In Texas, yeah, it is legal for car manufacturers to repair cars directly, but that is not the case in nearby New Mexico. So if you have repair or warranty work done in New Mexico, Tesla has to tow the car across the border to Texas where the work gets done legally. So it's kind of got this backward saying to comply with the different laws. So if you want to buy a Tesla and you live in Texas, you can go look at one in the showroom, but you actually technically buy it in New Mexico.
Right.
And if you
that's one of the ways they're getting around it. And then they've got some galleries is what they call it. Basically, they look at them as like an iPhone store,
yeah,
or an Apple store. And that you go in there and they can show you all the equipment, but they can't tell you what it's going to cost. They can't give you any sales pitch on it or anything else. They just simply inform you about the vehicle.
Yeah. Which is crazy because there's nothing else like that I can even think of.
Well, that's all they're allowed to do. Now, the states that ban any kind of direct sales are New Mexico, Alabama, South Carolina, Louisiana, Texas, Connecticut, West Virginia, Wisconsin, Nebraska, and Oklahoma.
Which is always funny because I have some friends that have Teslas here now in Huntington.
Oh yeah, you can own one here. You just can't buy it here.
Well, what I'm saying is, I have friends that own them here, and they've all gone to Columbus or somewhere like in Ohio to get them. And right. I always just thought that was because we did not have that store here. We were too small of an area. We didn't have the population, whatever. But no, the reason is that we don't have one here is because it's actually outlawed.
Yeah. Now there are other states that have limited sales, and what the government has done, or what the state government has done, is they've allowed Tesla to open X number of stores. For example, Ohio, like you mentioned, they're under that limited sales. They're only allowed to have 3 stores in the state of Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest one, I guess, looks like North Carolina has 6. They're restricted, but they can have 6 stores. But the ones that are limited sales with a certain number of stores, Virginia 2, Ohio 3, New Jersey 4, Maryland 4, Pennsylvania 5, New York 5, Georgia 5, and North Carolina 6.
I think one of the more interesting situations that I came across was Michigan. Now,
yeah.
In Michigan, in 2014, they changed the law to prohibit direct sales from automakers. In 2014, Michigan passed House Bill 5606 to keep auto manufacturers from selling directly. Now, if you think about it, most of the laws were already on the books in the other states we had talked about. They were kind of historically there.
Exactly.
But Michigan decided in 2014 that it was time to pass this law. So what do you think it was in 2014 that they decided this? Who were they looking out for?
They were looking out for the big three there.
That's right. I mean, that's the home to auto industry in America.
Yeah.
And House Bill 5606 changed little wording from the previous version of the Michigan dealership law, but its impact was very significant. The previous statute said that the manufacturer could not sell any new motor vehicle directly to a retail customer other than through its franchise dealers. 5606 removed its from the statute so that any new car sale must be through a franchise dealer. The new version of the law essentially barred Tesla and any future direct-to-consumer car company from selling its cars in the state unless it was through a franchise dealership, which, in order to become a franchise dealership, you had to go through the state to become authorized to do that.
Right.
So the law extended to Tesla showrooms and basically prevented Tesla from establishing any presence in Michigan without first becoming a franchise dealership. So what do you think the legislative intent was there?
To keep them from being able to sell cars.
Probably so.
Now, well, you figure the automobile industry has a large lobby in Michigan.
I would think so. Now, we haven't talked about this before, but I thought this would be a good time to talk about legislative intent and how that can be used whenever you're a lawyer or doing legal research or anything like that. So if you think a statute or a code section isn't clear, then you can try to argue what the intent of the legislature was. You know, why was this law passed? There's an old adage, and there's several that are kind of very similar, but this one goes, if you have the law on your side, argue the law. If you don't have the law on your side, argue intent. So you can figure out what the intent is of the legislature sometimes by getting the different committee notes. Because whenever there is a bill introduced, it's sent to a committee, and then the committee actually discusses it. And in some states, you can actually get the minutes of those committee meetings to try to figure out why the bill has the language that it actually has. And whenever you go this route, you're doing what is called statutory interpretation. So that's one way to try to like argue why a law says something that it does and how to argue that in a courtroom. You argue statutory interpretation. The reason the law was changed was because of this judge. Here's the committee notes on it. So sometimes that is used. Now, in 2016, Tesla filed a lawsuit against the state of Michigan and said that ban on direct sales violates commerce laws and that it was pushed by car dealers and GM in an attempt to block the electric automaker at the last hour when they were getting ready to start producing a lot of cars. So they filed this lawsuit, and it's been going on. And just recently here in 2020, some 4 years later, they were able to come to some sort of agreement with it, and they created some sort of loopholes. Now, the people that were sued were the attorney general, the governor, and people like that. So this was a lawsuit Tesla filed against the government. And the actual wording from the motion to dismiss and come to an agreement says, under Michigan law, Tesla's status as a manufacturer of motor vehicles does not prevent employees of Tesla from performing warranty, recall, service, or repair work in Michigan, so long as the work is not performed at a motor vehicle repair facility that is directly owned by Tesla itself, and that those employees are properly certified as specialty or master mechanics as appropriate under the Michigan laws. No provision of Michigan law prohibits employees of Tesla from performing warranty, recall, service, or repair work at a facility owned or operated by the Tesla service subsidiary on vehicles owned or leased by Tesla customers. So they carved out a little niche or a loophole for service centers in Michigan for different Tesla cars. And then as far as
as long as it's not owned by Tesla, right?
That's right. It has to be a separate owned and operated subsidiary. Now, as far as sales, they had another loophole they carved out, and it says no provision of MCL 445.1574-1 nor any provision of Michigan law prohibits Tesla from delivering vehicles to Michigan residents in Michigan, whether directly through a subsidiary, using an independent carrier, or otherwise, including assisting them with a vehicle trade-in, so long as the legal title for any vehicle sold by Tesla transfers outside the state of Michigan, consistent with the Michigan law. So basically what they've done is they've carved out that same loophole that I mentioned from that Cora article, where they're able to have showrooms and things like that there, but the actual title to the vehicle is not allowed to pass in Michigan. So the sale from Tesla to the final consumer has to pass out of state, and then ostensibly they would bring the car to Michigan and get it titled there.
Yeah, just change the title.
Yeah, which, you know, adds an extra layer of hassle to the final consumer, which is probably just the one last thing they want to try to do. So Michigan was actually the most populous state that was still prohibiting Tesla from having any kind of presence. Now, the one interesting thing I saw in West Virginia, there was some legislation regarding allowing Tesla to come into state, but the way they had worded the proposed legislation was that it had to be a zero emission vehicle, and they had to have been in production since 2008. So basically what they were trying to do was make it so that the actual automakers themselves for traditional combustion engine vehicles could not sell directly. They were trying to carve out a niche just for electric cars and zero emission vehicles, because they didn't want to flood the market and shut down all the different dealers. And I'm sure that was part of the lobby from the different dealers in state. They said, hey, you know, if Tesla wants to sell here, that's fine. They can sell their zero emission vehicles here. We don't care. But don't open the floodgates, because we don't want Ford, Chevy, whoever to come down here and start selling directly, because that's going to kill us.
Right.
And that's probably why they kind of tried to make that legislation very narrowly tailored to avoid them from getting put out of business.
But apparently that didn't pass, huh?
It did not. Not that I've seen, no.
But no, it was because we're still on the restricted. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that was
there again. It was probably the lobby that shut it down.
Well, I mean, I think the lobby was the one that made the concession to say, hey, if you're going to do it this way so it doesn't open the floodgates. Because otherwise, I mean, not that Ford, Chevy, or anybody else wants to direct sale, but I mean, hey, if I can save, you know, $2,000, $3,000 in a car buying directly from the manufacturer, then you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to buy directly from the manufacturer.
Yeah, and you know, if they can't restrict you from being able to buy it, what they have done in a lot of cases is, like you said, they said, well, you can't service them here.
Yeah.
You can't open up a facility to service, because when you buy a car, you can't just think about just, you know, what is the price I'm getting and is that the right color and the right options? You got to think about who's going to take care of this car for me. I mean, unless you know how to do all this stuff yourself, you usually, if you buy a new car, you want to go back to the place where you bought it and let them take care of the servicing, because hopefully if you got a new car, you got some kind of warranty on it and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean,
now, so if you can't service it, you're going to sell me a car, but you can't service it. Now, what am I going to do around here? What I saw, the closest Tesla dealer is in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, which is 2.5 hours away.
Yeah, and I'm not going to drive, take a day to go get my car serviced.
Well, but those cars, and this is the thing too, those cars don't really need a lot of service. Traditionally, they don't need the upkeep.
You're right. They don't, because it surprised me. A lot of the updates they need come in through it's just like you get an update. They send it to you and your car receives it.
Yeah.
And it can do that way. Then they also can do diagnostics through the air. I mean, they can diagnose your car without you being there. And then there's not as many moving parts on it with it being an electric car, so you don't have a combustion engine that is naturally in a always breaking down, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I got an email that said my truck was due for an oil change. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just somehow it knew. I don't know. It's kind of scary.
Now, but one of the problems is what they say. See, their production facility is like a year backed up on orders,
yeah,
trying to get it out. So everything they make goes towards making the new cars. Well, there's like they never thought about what happens if one of our cars has a wreck and needs a new hood or a new fender,
yeah,
or something like that. They don't have parts supplied anywhere. So there have been people that said like they bought a new Tesla and they wrecked it. They got in a wreck through no fault of their own. Like 3 months later, they waited 6 months to get their car fixed because the place that was authorized to work on it, first of all, there's very few places authorized to work on it. And then second of all, there's no spare parts available. So they had to wait forever before they could get their car repaired.
And I imagine there's going to be quite a few wrecked Teslas because the amount of horsepower those things generate and how fast they are is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Did you know how fast a Tesla is?
No, I've never been in one or read the specs on it.
I have not been in one, but I've read the specs in it. And I mean, good Lord, they're fast.
Well, I heard they had to add sound to them like an engine because people were sneaking up on people in crosswalks and running them down because they didn't hear the car coming. So they had to add it so it makes a noise that is like an engine revving so that people are aware of it because you're not used to silent cars running around. Kind of like that episode in The Office when what's his name pinned the other one to the wall. To the out in the parking lot. That Prius doesn't make a noise if you keep it below 5 miles an hour.
I was going to say what they need to do is tie a bell around its neck. So
yeah,
like a cat.
Yeah, that's right. But that's one of the arguments as to why the dealers are there is, first of all, you're going to need a dependable place to serve it, and they've got certified technicians. And then, you know, to operate the car, the consumer must have license issued by the state government agency. And, of course, these dealers, they know how to get all that done before driving off the lot. Most time you have to have insurance already. 85% of new car sales require financing, which is regulated by the state and federal government. So they've got all that under control. Trade-ins, there's specific paperwork and a way those have to be handled and everything because, you know, that comes off your taxes that you pay and stuff. So not to mention that cars contain hazardous materials. So all that is regulated. So that's one of the reasons for dealers is what they're saying is they have the time to concentrate and take care of all that. Whereas if you just buy it online, you could be getting stuck with something, you know, that you don't really understand.
Talk about cars containing hazardous materials. I bought some, picked up some chicken wings the other night and they were so hot. I think they probably qualified as hazardous materials. They were, too hot to handle.
Too hot to handle, and you think they're considered hazardous materials, huh?
They could have been, yeah. The next day was not pretty. This is the thing about spicy food. I can eat spicy food; it doesn't really bother me, but I pay the price.
I don't really like spicy food. I like it flavorful, but I don't like it spicy. Like I don't ever go for buffalo wings; I go for barbecued wings.
Wow, you probably like vanilla ice cream too.
Oh, I do. I love vanilla ice cream. That's like when we go through cookout and they've got like 50 flavors of milkshakes. And I'll say, oh, I have a large vanilla one. And Riley will say, Dad, there's 50 flavors there. What are you doing? I say, oh, I don't want to get an M&M stuck in my straw or something like that. I just get vanilla. Vanilla's good.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying there's a lot of choices out there.
Now, Tesla's not the only one that's being innovative and trying to figure out how to cut out the middleman. Have you heard of car subscriptions?
You mean like in larger cities where you basically belong to like a club and they park cars around the city and then you just go grab one and drive it?
No, not necessarily. It's really more like a lease. Instead of leases, some car manufacturers are now offering direct-to-consumer subscription services as an alternative, promising savings by cutting the middleman, the dealer, out of the deal. Volvo's online subscription service is one of the industry's more successful attempts at this. At $600 or so a month, the Care by Volvo program isn't exactly cheap, but in exchange for joining the program, customers are loaned Volvo's new crossover SUV, the XC40, with the option to trade in for yet another new car after a year. The monthly subscription fee also includes insurance coverage and maintenance. By last November, less than a year after the program rolled out, Volvo executives were bragging about the challenges of its success, including a customer backlog and the wrath of the auto dealer monopoly.
It's one thing I can't stand. It's a Volvo executive bragging.
Yeah, that's right. That doesn't sound safe, and they're supposed to be safe. But I thought that was pretty interesting. I'd never heard of that. So, you know, it's just like a lot of things that you get an app or whatever and pay a monthly fee for or something like that. You know, it's just like Disney Plus signing up for it.
Yeah.
But it's a Volvo. And then each year you can just swap it for a new model, and you just pay that amount. And that covers your insurance and your maintenance. So you never pay a maintenance bill, and you never have to pay for any insurance.
And you never own anything because you're constantly paying for it.
Well, that's true. But if you decide you don't like it anymore, you just, when your year's up, walk away from it.
That's true. I mean, there's good and bad for everything. I like to, you know, one day own things and not have to make car payments. I didn't have a car payment forever.
Yeah, I didn't either until just recently.
Yeah.
I had my car for 7 years. It'd been paid off for three.
Yep.
And I traded it in, got a new one, got a new car payment.
Yep. Well, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Well, the itch was calling me, and this is a good time to buy. They've got a glut of autos because of the COVID. So they quit making them, and they quit selling them and everything else. So they got them all backlogged, and they're trying to get the 2021s in, and they got all these 2020s sitting around.
I got to move the 2020s so I can get the 2021s in, because before long, the 2022s are going to be here. Then I don't know what I'm going to do.
That's right. I'm going to have to eat all these 2020s because everybody will want the 2021s. They won't want the 2020s, so I got to drop the price and sell them now.
That was my, I started to venture into my train game voice. So have you ever played the game Ticket to Ride?
No.
It's a pretty popular board game, and we play that here, and when Whenever we play Ticket to Ride, I always do my Ticket to Ride voice. It's like, hey, I gotta get a line to St. Louis. See, it's very 1920s type voice.
Yeah, yeah, we're gonna make him talk. See, yeah, we're gonna rough him up. Yeah,
we end up all doing that. Stephanie doesn't, but me and the boys, we all have our train game voice.
Well, that sounds fun for everyone.
It's good family fun. Good family fun, see?
Taking
a train to St. Louis, see? Well, I think that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask you different legal questions and definitions that we talked about. See if you remember what I said.
I shall try.
So the first question I have is not so much a legal question, but more of a business question.
Monkey business?
Monkey business. That was the name of the boat that Gary Hart was caught having
caught on
with his wife, wasn't it?
After he challenged the press to follow him and see if he was doing anything wrong, and he was.
How do I even remember that? I had to have been like, I don't know, very young.
Yeah, you probably heard me tell the story.
Maybe so. All right. So what are the different business models for selling products that we talked about?
Well, there's a direct to customer, and there's the second party, and then there's the second party that sells to the third party for the third party to have a pyramid scheme.
Well, in essence, you are correct. So you can buy things directly from the manufacturer, which is what you were talking about when you said the first thing. The second thing would be single level marketing, where there's a direct seller who buys products from the manufacturer and then sells them to the customer. That's like the middleman type model. And then the other model, which you were talking about, is multi-level marketing, where somebody buys a product from the the manufacturer for it. They sell it to other consumers, and additionally, they recruit other people to sell the product as well and get commissions from that. So we haven't gone that way with cars just yet, but I think we might be getting close. Could you imagine seeing that on Facebook, people selling cars through multi-level marketing?
Well, you know, it probably goes on with used cars.
It might. I don't know. It's a,
there's probably some kind of underground market of them doing things like that.
Underground pyramid used car scheme.
Yeah, an upside down pyramid that's going underground. That's probably where the parts. I see those movies where they've got those cut shops there where they bring in the cars and they'll say, "I need a 2010 Mercedes." And so then the guy goes out and steals a 2010 Mercedes and they drive it in, they cut it all up.
A cut shop?
Use the parts. A chop shop. Cut shop, chop shop, whatever. I'm not in that business, you know. I just watch it in the movies.
If you're gonna be in the business, you gotta talk the lingo, Tommy. It's got damn chop shop.
I'm not in that business. Only thing I get chopped is a salad now and then.
I'm more of a wedge kind of guy. So I talked about statutory interpretation. What is that?
Yeah. Statutory interpretation.
Yeah.
That's where the statute has unintended consequences because of the way it was interpreted, so they have to rewrite the law?
No, not quite. I mean, I guess it's kind of a strict definition of it. But when I'm talking about statutory interpretation, what I was talking about was if you have a law that was passed and it doesn't exactly, on its face, doesn't seem to support what you want, then what you can do is you can pull committee notes from when that law was passed, when it went to committee in the different legislative branch, and try to read the committee notes and see, okay, why did they pass this law? What was the reason they passed this law?
What was the intent?
What was the legislative intent? And then you can take that and you can actually argue that when you're in court before a judge and say, well, judge, the reason you should rule in my favor is because this is what the intent of the law was. I understand this might be somewhat ambiguous the way it's written, but here's what the real reason it was. And you can see this from the committee notes. They said that they wanted this law to do X, Y, Z. So therefore, even though they were inarticulate with the way they wrote it, it still should do X, Y, Z. So ergo, you should rule in my favor. I win. Thank you. I'm leaving the courtroom right now. Thank you, judge.
And besides, I'm a hell of a football fantasy player. Fantasy football player.
150 points this week, Tommy. That's nothing to laugh about.
No, that's nothing to laugh about.
Well, that's going to do it for Legal Briefs.
Well, all right. I was at about 50-50 on that.
Yeah. It sounds like your fantasy football team.
Well, no, I'm 1-0. Well, that's better than 50-50. I'm 100%.
Yeah, but you were good enough to beat some, but not good enough to beat many.
Well, that's true. I'm not the top dog like you.
That's true. Well, I am for this week, so I'm going to enjoy it. Because you know what?
Maybe.
Somebody's coming after me next week. I can already feel it.
Well, that's what I say when I'm driving down the interstate passing people. There's always a bigger dog on the road, so you got to move over for the bigger dog.
That's pretty deep.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I don't know. It's something to pass the time while you're cruising along.
I always like the phrase, it's a dog-eat-dog world, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear. That's life right there in a nutshell.
That's right. That's life when you're a nut.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Hello. Welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's Random Thought is online schooling. I am of the opinion that online schooling for grades K through 5 is a complete waste of time. I don't know, and never have known, any kids that age that can sit for 6.5 hours of schooling on the computer. Of course, there are breaks in there, but even at that, it is way too much. They are even having gym class online. Seriously? They played Simon Says for 5 minutes and called that gym. This is a complete sham and a waste of time. Besides the kids not really getting anything out of it, they require an at-home adult for the entire session. You can't tell a 5-year-old to take a 4-minute break and then come back. Most don't know the difference between 4 minutes and 4 days. So this online study is wreaking havoc on personal economies. While some of the curriculum may seem pretty straightforward, kids that age always have questions. Kids that age want to talk. Kids that age need socialization and interact with other kids. I grew up in a neighborhood where we had a ton of kids and played together all the time. And I didn't need school to interact with others. But now, most kids don't leave the house unless they're participating in some kind of sport or activity. So they need school to learn how to be with others. But these kids are all told to just mute their computers and listen. Another part I disagree with is the fact that they try to run through all of the different classes each day. That just adds to more confusion, I think. Just do one subject each day, or two at the most, like a morning subject and an afternoon subject. I think it is easier to keep kids focused on one subject and overcover it rather than just skim through all kinds of stuff, especially without asking questions or anything, because apparently that just leads to chaos due to delays in talking and not being able to see everyone depending on which app you're using. I've even heard a certain college kid complain about that. So just imagine a 5 to 10-year-old handling it. Another disparity is the broadband access. In our area, some have adequate bandwidth, but a lot do not. And there are not that many hotspots to go to in order to get a signal. In this rural area, which is probably in the better part of the state for connectivity, we still have a lot of problems. Then the program they are using to teach with is very outdated and slow. This solution for connectivity, however, is beyond belief to me. They have school buses that will come around and pick your student up and park in a library parking lot where they provide Wi-Fi access. So you're going to put them on a closed bus in the summer and no air conditioning and sit in a parking lot. That is the worst idea ever. Just let them go to class at that point, because this sounds like some kind of corporal punishment. Another solution that has popped up is daycare centers that you drop your kid at, and they have employees that assist them getting online and following the curriculum. Isn't that the same thing as being in school? If school isn't all right, then how can that be? It just gets crazier and crazier. It just shows that we had absolutely no planning or even any idea that something like this could ever happen and that we would have to deal with it. Just like 9/11 changed airports and airlines, I think schools will start employing changes. What if school were taught in such a manner that it is done at school the same way it would be done at home? So kids would just get on their device at home instead of in a classroom. And it is the same because the teacher isn't with them in either case. As long as their work could be tracked and verified, what difference would it make? I propose we just freeze everyone where they are in their schooling and declare this a lost year. Don't even try to go to school, because it is a lost cause. Hopefully, by next fall, all this will be behind us and we will just pick up where we left off. You remember that? March of this year? You know, the 15 days to flatten the curve? Seems like our leaders are like the 5-year-olds about telling time. They don't know the difference between 15 days and 15 months. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.